Well, as you know, I'm Marianne Kerwin, and I'm going to be very brief because Ken really has much more up-to-date information than I would. I retired a couple of years ago from a family law practice, but I was just going to give you a little background. You all know that Liz Baldwin was going to do this session, and we were just devastated by her death in March of this year. We felt she's irreplaceable. We were all in just a terrible state of sadness. And Ken spoke up and said he would come in her place. He and Liz have always worked together on the outlines. They were in partnership. And they always work together. And he has done this. He has offered to come, and he has prepared the outline that we've passed out. And if anybody didn't get one, please accept one. As I said, you know, many of us feel Liz is irreplaceable. But I want to thank Ken in particular for helping fill the terrible gap she leaves. She was one in a million, really. I met her more than 10 years ago. I met her in Florida at a conference, and I could tell right away she was a gem. And we've been in close touch ever since, and she's been in touch with others like Mary Lofton in our office. And she's unique. But as I say, they've worked together, and I know that we're very, very fortunate in having Ken to help us right now carry on, and the outline's terrific. So here we go. Oh, and they have two boys.
We have two boys.
Yes.
I'm now a single father, so. But I turned the cell phone off for this. And let's see if I can get hooked up here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me all the way in the back? Okay, great. Breastfeeding in the law. Current developments, that's what we're here for, right? My wife was basically the guru of this subject and invented it as a sort of specialty for herself. She was the better half, I like to say, and I was the other half. We always work together on a lot of this stuff. I can't replace her because I'm not a leader, I'm not a mother, and that was part of her uniqueness, was she was a great lawyer, but she was also a great leader, and she was a great mother. So she could get that woman-to-woman story that I will never get. But I've been practicing law for a long time, and I know the materials as well as she does. And a lot of the thoughts really were a joint, mutual thing that we came up with over the years. So let me get you started, and we'll talk about breastfeeding in the law. What are the things that are going on recently? Well, fortunately, it's been relatively quiet. And that's good, okay? We don't like to read a lot of stuff in the newspaper or see it on TV about someone going to jail or losing their baby, all that kind of stuff. We'd like to just know that the lawyers are getting phone calls and not a whole lot of bad stuff is happening. This year, there was a lot of legislation introduced in the various states. I'm going to talk about that and give you some details because there were some interesting things. And you know, I think the place to start, though, is why is there anything to do with lawyers and breastfeeding? And why would anybody call a lawyer that had anything to do with breastfeeding? Well, the most common call is family law. People getting divorced or paternity cases, and they're right in the middle of the system, and they need lawyers, and they've got lawyers, but they're looking for help on the aspects of their case that relate to breastfeeding. The other kind of things that come up, employment. And I think in the employment sector that it comes up every single day, but people practically never call a lawyer, and that's probably as it should be. There are millions of women going back to work all the time, and they all face an issue about pumping. Some of them are lucky to work for employers who have programs or who are at least friendly to it, and others aren't. And so these women face that issue virtually every day. It's not something that gets played out in a courtroom. And it's rarely in their interest to do any litigation about it, but that comes up. Another kind of issue that comes up is jury duty. You get called for jury duty, you're nursing your one-year-old, and it's very inconvenient, and you know that you can't sit in the courtroom all day, or your baby's not used to being separated from you, and so that comes up. It's not the most earth-shaking of legal situations, but it does come up. The other big one that comes up is legislation, and this is one of the major things that's happening in this field, and we'll talk quite a bit about that. And lastly, there's those nasty cases that I was talking about, the social service agency cases where babies get taken away, or criminal cases where moms get charged with crimes relating to their kids and breastfeeding. Those are very infrequent. Some of them are extremely highly publicized, so you hear all about them. And really, that's how it all got started with Liz, I know, many years ago, back in 91, I think, with a highly publicized case involving a mom in New York. So those are the kinds of things that go on in this area of the law. And the first one I want to talk to you about really is the nursing in public stuff, which gets back to, it really fits into a lot of the other areas. There are, let me ask you, does anybody know where in the Constitution it says you can't breastfeed? I mean, does it say anywhere that the president has the power to make any law, or the Congress has the power to make any law about breastfeeding? Unfortunately, we still, even in this year, have a state, Indiana, passing a bill that says it's not indecent exposure to breastfeed in public. So I think that's nice that they passed it. I'm glad they finally got around to it. But if they hadn't passed it, does that mean that it is illegal to breastfeed? No. Do you have a constitutional right to breastfeed? Well, the courts have said yes. If you read through the outline, you'll see the legal citations if you're a lawyer and you need to have those. But basically, it's a privacy thing. This is something that the state and the government has absolutely no business telling you to do or not to do. On the other hand, when we talk about our legislation, the state has an absolute interest in promoting breastfeeding, but not in restricting it. So when we talk about the right to breastfeed, we are saying very clearly, sure, you have a constitutional right. And there's a few places where it doesn't apply. If you go into family court and you're going to argue custody and visitation, your right to breastfeeding is meaningless. If you go into criminal court and you're charged with a crime and you go to jail, your right to breastfeed may be meaningless. So there are some situations, they're pretty extreme. There's some other theories that it's a basic fundamental human right to breastfeed. And I think there's an even better theory, which is it is the child's human right to be breastfed. So if we have to have theory to support this in the law, those are some of the theories. I don't worry a whole lot about theories, though, because one thing I learned as a practicing lawyer the last 22 years is that when someone comes in my office and says, "What are my rights?" I'm like, oh boy, here we go again. It's not about your rights, especially when you're the party. And usually my clients, they're the party in the divorce case. So when they start saying that, I know I'm in trouble. And they have to be re-educated about what they're doing and why they're doing it and where they want to go with it. But there's a bunch of situations that come up with the nursing in public stuff. One of them is, and I get this call frequently, I was in Kmart, and the clerk came over and told me I couldn't do that here. And you wonder why, well, what are you going to do as a lawyer? Well, as a lawyer, there's not a whole lot you can do. This is not the kind of thing that really justifies lawsuits, litigation, thousands and thousands of dollars in expenses. It's something that really requires education. So when we get that kind of call, the first thing we do is tell them, well, go call your local leader, get some information, and go try to educate those people about why you're doing a good thing. We also say, do you know what state you're in? And most people do know what state they're in. And then we pull out the magic book that says what law is in place in what state. And then we say, I can't give you legal advice in your state, but I can give you information, and there is a law in your state, so you have an absolute right. Go take a copy of the law and go to your local Kmart clerk or manager and educate them. Nicely. This is not something where adversity and conflict make good things happen. In fact, it rarely anything happens good in adversity and conflict. You have to think about what happens in courtrooms, and although it's always a throw the dice in any case, with breastfeeding, one thing that my wife has done consistently for 12 years is try to keep cases out of courtrooms that involve breastfeeding, because there's no good that's going to come out of it. Only bad. Only bad precedents that are going to hurt other people. So we discourage the litigation. There have been cases, of course, but it's not usually the right thing to do. So we talk about the situation and the remedy. What's the remedy? Well, the remedy for the clerk told me I couldn't do this is go educate the clerk or the store and try to make this work for yourself, or don't go there. You know, that's a terrible thing to say, but you don't need a hassle. Young mothers, the whole point of legislation is to encourage people to breastfeed. And so if you have women going out and being told by the clerk in Kmart not to breastfeed, are they going to go wean? Well, that's sort of like an extreme. I don't think that being told that in Kmart is going to make someone wean. I'm not a leader and I'm not a lactation consultant, but I have trouble believing that one little thing. It's more like the mother got angry because it was her right. Okay? Most experienced mothers don't even think about this. They just go, on breast, off you go. And with older children, nobody even knows. Most women are not out there trying to expose themselves. And interesting, these situations come up, I've noticed. Never is it a man that's complaining. Never, not once. It's always some woman who's complained that someone else has lifted up her shirt to feed her baby in the store. So, it's still nonsense. I mean, the idea that someone should tell you not to do that is ridiculous. But I don't look at it in terms of your rights. I look at it in terms of what's practical. And as a legal situation, it's horrible because what are you going to do? You're going to go sue Kmart? You know what's involved in that? I mean, really, thousands and thousands of dollars, a lot of hassle, and potential for setting yourself up for something bad to happen. So if you're a leader and you get these kind of calls from people, you don't want to encourage them to run to their lawyers so much as you want to encourage them to educate. Okay? That's the best remedy, educate. The really exciting stuff in breastfeeding in the law is legislation. Back in 1991, there weren't any states that had any form of breastfeeding legislation. And now there are over 40 states that have some form of it. The first state that passed a law was Florida. And there was a person there testifying to the legislature. Liz Ball. Yeah, the Florida bill came about because the governor's daughter, the governor at the time, his daughter was nursing, and someone told her she couldn't nurse someplace. So, and she was one of these sorts of women who doesn't take no, you know, for an answer. And since she was the governor's daughter, you know, she had some influence. And I'm trying to make sure everybody can hear me. And things started to happen, and some interesting people got involved, and Liz got involved, and the next thing you knew, we had a statute, and it was a great one. It's still a good one. And that was what started the ball rolling. And ever since then, more and more people have called Liz Baldwin to get help on doing it in their states. And it's starting to take some really interesting forms. The trend has to do with the workplace. Strange as it may seem, this is why I said the real action now is in employment. The women that tend to have legal problems or have a problem are usually working women, and working women of all socioeconomic levels. So it doesn't matter rich or poor, but if you're going to work and you've got an employer and you've got a baby, you've got sometimes a problem. And one of the things I've noticed in the calls is that an awful lot of people are calling and they're having really what I'd describe as a lactation problem or technology problem with the pumps. There are things that lawyers can do and things that leaders can do, and lawyers don't know about pumps. I don't know how many of them have called and they had some little hand pump and they're saying, I can't do it. You know, and all they need to know is call your local leader or get to a lactation consultant and they're going to help you get a nice spiffy pump that's going to go and you're going to be able to do it. So that kind of problem is simply management of lactation. That's not a legal problem in my mind. But that's the kind of calls I get fairly regularly. Another thing in the legislation is there were some bad laws passed. There were some laws passed, unfortunately, one of them I think was right here in California. And they said, yeah, you have the right to nurse any place you want to be except someone else's house unless you're being discreet. They did it in Georgia. And they said, oh yeah, you have the right to nurse any place you have to be as long as you're being discreet and modest. You know, and you have to wonder who's setting themselves up to be the decider of what is the bright line between discreet and not discreet, between modest and not modest. Those kind of things are things that Liz would hate. She hated them. She would get mad at people if they call them and say, oh yeah, we're going to try to pass a bill and it says you have the right to breastfeed any place you have the right to be as long as you're discreet. And she'd hit the ceiling. Very bad. Very, very bad. Defeats the whole purpose of the thing. The point is to encourage people. We don't want to lose any one mother because somebody said, oh, you can't do that here. So the whole point is to encourage, and when you start putting in restrictions, you start to discourage. And then you have someone saying, well, gee, the law says... Well, you don't need the law in your life to as to how you feed your baby, but you know, when it comes to legislation, this is one of the areas where we're really starting to see a lot of stuff happening. A lot of the states are passing these kind of things. I mentioned Indiana before. There's several others this year, and I'll give you that when I get to my my summary. The bad ones, you know, one of them, Georgia, was corrected. So I guess they got a mouthful from Liz, and or an earful, and went back to the drawing board and took it out, which is great. The one other thing that has been disappointing is that there has been federal legislation proposed pending for years now and has never gotten passed in Congress. And I think that that's an area that's going to need some pushing. I think it would be in the interest of the breastfeeding community, of the La Leche League, and everybody concerned to support that legislation and to take steps to do whatever at the grassroots level would help it get passed. I think also I'm seeing this sort of map of the country with all these different colors on it. And over here is a color, let's say purple, where you can breastfeed any place you have a right to be. And over here is a color green where you don't have to go to jury duty if you're breastfeeding. And over here is another couple, red, color red, that says you have a right to express milk in the workplace and to have unpaid leave time and et cetera, the things that concern with employment. So you see this patchwork. Some states have all, some states have one. New York has a civil rights provision that makes it a violation of a mother's civil rights to tell her she can't breastfeed in a public place. You know, so you got all these sort of things all over the place. I think eventually it's got to go towards the direction of getting uniform. And you know, the other part of the whole story is what we were talking about just a moment ago. What happens if your state doesn't have a law? Does that mean you can't breastfeed? Well, could you not breastfeed in Indiana before this spring? Well, yeah, you could. It's not illegal. It's not illegal anyplace. Unfortunately, when we pass the laws, sometimes that's like giving something that wasn't there before, some people think. But the reality is that even if there's no statute, as I said before, you've got a constitutional right, you probably have a basic human right, and your child probably has a basic fundamental human right to it. So there's no reason to think that just because a state doesn't have any legislation that it's somehow illegal or it's going to be indecent exposure or some other crime. The really fun stuff, though, this spring... I don't know how many of you are familiar with state legislatures, and there's 50 of them, so there's basically 50 different systems. And they all meet at different times. Some of them meet year-round, but, you know, like Florida meets for a month in April. Various states have different times. So when we update our research on this stuff, we get a lot of things that are pending. And I can tell you this is pending, but I don't know yet whether it's passed, and I don't know whether it will pass, and it may never pass. So pending bills don't tell us a whole lot. But we do look at the ones that are passed, and as I said, Indiana was interesting for getting on the train with the public nursing in public. An interesting one from Louisiana, and I hadn't seen this one before, but it basically says that the Department of Social Services in Louisiana must include information about breastfeeding and lactation management in their daycare staff training programs. And also, this is fascinating, no discrimination against breastfed babies in daycare. Interesting. I hadn't seen that one before. Another one that I thought was sort of interesting, and this is one I'm going to make a critical comment, and I'm going to put an asterisk next to it and ask you to forgive me if I turn out to be wrong. But in Wyoming, anybody here from Wyoming? Good. In Wyoming, they have a statute that recognizes breastfeeding's values to the state and its citizens. And I sort of wonder, well, it recognizes, that's nice. Does it encourage? Does it promote? Does it do anything other than recognize? I hope it does more. But at least it's something. We have a couple, an interesting one. The Nursing Mothers in the Workplace Act has been, I believe it was passed in New York. It provides a right to express milk at work. And it requires employers to make reasonable efforts to accommodate and provide a location for a woman to express. And I think it's fascinating because I think that's where the real action really is. That's where things are, this climate that we live in where nursing might be a crime, I think it'll go away a lot faster if women are working and being supported while they're working. If they're not supported with it, the breastfeeding is going to go right out the window. When it comes right down to it, for many women, there's no choice. They have to keep the job. So if we do things in the workplace, I think we're going to promote breastfeeding and make a better world. And the Nursing Mothers in the Workplace Act is a good one. I expect it to be something of a model that will be proposed in other states and I believe passed in many places. It's got some other provisions. Oregon also had a statute this year on breastfeeding at work. Unpaid rest periods, that's a common thing. They don't want to make employers pay people to express, but unpaid leave where everybody else is having leave. Rhode Island, another workplace bill. This is an interesting one. I don't like these. I know that there are people that like these. Something bothers me about it, but there's a breastfeeding friendly designation that's thrown around some places, and in Kentucky this year they passed a statute that permits mothers to breastfeed. That's great, like they couldn't before in Kentucky. And permits businesses or agencies to use the designation breastfeeding friendly for having a policy supporting breastfeeding. I know it's good. I mean, you want to promote it. It just seems to me like a big nothing, you know. Now they put up a sign that says breastfeeding friendly, and what does that do? I don't think it brings anybody, I don't think it turns any mom who is going to bottle feed into a nursing mother. I don't think it makes anybody wean. I don't think it makes anybody keep going when they were going to wean. I just don't think it does a whole lot, but I'm a skeptic, what can I say? Several states with more of the it's okay to breastfeed in public, it's not indecent exposure. New Jersey, it's now part of your civil rights to include pregnancy and breastfeeding in discrimination matters. In other words, if you're discriminated against at work because of breastfeeding, that is now officially part of their discrimination statute and brings you into federal court and all kinds of stuff that makes it fancy. Hopefully you don't have to use that kind of stuff. Virginia had another workplace bill that encourages employers to recognize the benefits of breastfeeding and provide unpaid break time and appropriate space. And those are really the two issues in all the employment things, unpaid break time and an appropriate space. And usually the other thing that I think should follow is storage, because a lot of moms are pumping during the day and saving that for later, and they need to place a refrigerator or a freezer or something to put it in. California, being different, and I don't even know why this would even come up in my search, but it did. There's a bill concerning breast cancer research that was passed, and it sets up biomonitoring of breast milk as a factor in community health. And not being a doctor, I don't know what the heck they're looking for, but apparently they're going to spend a few bucks to research and look for markers of community health in the breast milk. I'm not technically able to tell you what that means, but they passed the law, I can tell you that. Louisiana, I think I mentioned that before, they had the daycare no discrimination against breastfeeding. I love that one. And that is pretty much it. A lot of action, I think. You know, this is just in the last 6 months. And that's a lot of action. There's like 18, 20 bills on my list. I can't tell you they're all going to be passed or not passed, but I think that's a significant amount of legislation. And considering where we started from with none, I think it's a ball that's rolling and gathering steam, or moss, or whatever balls roll. So that's basically what happens with legislation. And then family law. And that's really my specialty. And you know what? It's like never a breastfeeding issue in family law. And most of the calls I get are from people in family law cases. And the typical call is, I'm nursing my three-month-old or my six-month-old or my one-year-old or my two-year-old and getting divorced and the father wants overnights now. Or he wants a week in the summer or he wants some kind of a very extended visitation. And this was Liz's passion. It's a very difficult area because, again, the last thing you want to do is shove people into court to make a judge make a ruling about this. The reality is there isn't a judge anywhere in the country that's put off overnights past age two, as far as we know. There's very little chance that you're going to get one. There's a father's rights movement that's been going on for the last 10 years. Part of it has to do with a financial matter involving child support because most states and the federal government have urged fathers to spend more time with their children by granting them a little bit of a break on their child support if they spend over a certain amount of time. So being a skeptic as I am and a cynic, I see a lot of dads out there running to get more visitation so that they can drop that child support check down a little bit. And of course, you know, we don't like that, but there is a father's rights movement. There are judges all over the country that will not bat an eyelash about giving weekends with a six-week-old. And just to illustrate how ridiculous the whole thing can be, I'll tell you about a non-breastfeeding case that just happened recently. My clients were having, before they hired me, of course, they're having problems. This lady had a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 9-year-old. A lot of conflict with the husband, and a lot of conflict on the exchanges when he would come to get the kids. So they hire a private eye, and the private eye comes with a camera to record. And the guy comes to get the kids. The three kids come out. The little girl doesn't want to go. She's the 12-year-old. She doesn't want to go. She starts crying. The guy grabs her by the arm and starts dragging her towards the car. And she's screaming and yelling, dragging her heels. The two little boys, one of them runs in the house. The other one is standing there crying. He's yelling and screaming at her. His face is red as a beet. And it's all on tape. And finally the little girl runs away from him. They all run inside. No visit that day. All on tape. Then they don't let him see the kids for a week or so, and they wind up going to court. And they play this tape for a judge. And after viewing this, the judge looks at my client and says, "Why did you make him wait 60 seconds before you brought the kids out?" Now, that judge is a human being. That judge has absolutely no concept of children or even what the issue is with this. You see somebody committing a crime against a child, and I believe that any violence is a crime. I mean, I'm sorry, but spanking to me is a felony if I did it to one of you. And if I did it to my child, it's got to be at least that. That's another subject, and we won't get real far into it. But the reason I tell you all this is, you think, oh, how can the judge make these? Well, you know what that judge did? He made those kids go with that guy. And they were all already traumatized by it. So do you think the judge really understood what he was doing? No. Do you want to put your fate in the hands, or your kid's fate in the hands of a judge? You shouldn't. It had nothing to do with breastfeeding. It had nothing to do with even anything between the parents. It has to do with violence. But the judge couldn't even see it. The judge saw it as, he was had a right to be mad because you were late. That's absurd. It's absurd when I hear all over the country Oh, the judge said overnight visitation at 2 months. The judge sent a 6 week off for 6 nights in a row. You hear it all the time. And they won't 50-50 time with infants. Try that one on for size. Can anyone in this room think of whether nature intended that? Does anybody have an opinion on that? Because I do. Okay, and I think it's pretty obvious what my opinion is. And, you know, I'm a lawyer, and so I have a responsibility to the system and not to be too critical. But I am very critical of the system. The fact is, when someone comes to me and they say, I'm having a custody visitation problem and I'm breastfeeding, the first thing I tell them, it's not a breastfeeding question. I don't care what you're doing, it's not a breastfeeding question. It's about separation, it's about attachment, it's about bonding, it's about what's right for the kid, it's not about the breastfeeding. Too many mothers have called and said, and what you hear from them is, I'm breastfeeding and I want to use that as an excuse for him not to have overnights. Too many women have gone into court ahead of my clients and said, he can't have visitation, I'm breastfeeding. Well, it's not something that you're going to be successful with. Judges aren't going to really listen. If the judge happens to be someone who bottle-fed and is a she, you're in big trouble. If it's a he and his wife bottle-fed, you're in trouble. Even if they nurse, they're still going to... There's one case I read recently. It was a riot because it was decided by a judge who had nursed her babies, and she found a woman in contempt because the woman came in and said, I don't want to do jury duty because I got a breastfeeding baby. And the judge actually wrote her up and charged her with a crime. So you wonder, you think she nursed her babies. She must know something. Well, nah. If you're a judge, it's almost like you're automatically disqualified from understanding this point. But the point is, it's the bonding and the separation. So another thing you have to realize is that these thoughts that Liz and I have had and these opinions that we have strongly advocated for 20 years, they don't go over easily some places. But there's... It's hard to explain, but people just don't understand what to do about it. And they don't understand that what we're saying is the fathers have to be involved. And we don't care if you're mad at him. And we don't care if he doesn't know how to change the diaper. You're going to teach him. Okay? We are always saying there's something that will work here. There is some compromise that will work. And that will provide this man with a very strong bond to his child. And it's usually something that we call short, frequent visitation. Those are the words, it's three little words, short, frequent visitation. What's right? Well, if you've got people that live right next to each other, it's real easy. Because then they don't have a lot of travel and expense and trouble. If you've got people that live in different states, different cities, it's almost impossible. So one of the things that we get all the time is people call us up and they say, I'm breastfeeding, I'm in a custody dispute, and I want to move home in another state. And the first thing we do, whoa, stop, slow down. What do you think will happen if you move to another state? When do you think your child will go to see his or her father? He will go all summer. He'll go all Christmas break. He'll go all spring break when he's school age. Before that, he'll go all those things too. And more. He'll even maybe go 50-50. If you push your luck, he'll go 50-50. So you don't want to push your luck. The courts are not real friendly to breastfeeding. One of the things that my wife used to do was visitation plans. She would do a recommendation in writing. And in it, I don't know if any of you have ever seen one of these. It's not a one-page piece of paper that says, oh, go on Saturday at this time and Friday at the, you know. She's got like 20 pages of references to the psychological literature on this subject, because that is the point. It's about bonding, separation. If you're a leader and you're getting calls from moms who are involved in divorce cases, and they're saying, oh, well, I'm nursing, so you can't have overnights, right? You say, well, you better think about that. You better think about that again. Let's see if we can come up with a way to do it. One of the most successful things Liz ever did was she had a client in San Diego, and this gal had a real problem because the father of her baby lived in Nevada, and she was nursing, and she was a leader candidate, I believe. I don't think she ever finished, but she decided to win him over with Liz's help. And one of the things she did was she made a really nice picture album of the baby, and she sent it to the guy's mother. And she invited the mother over when they were in town. And she did things like that, which a lot of women, once they get in the custody or divorce dispute, being nice to someone on the other side is the last thing they're going to do. And it's usually the last thing their lawyers will tell them to do. Well, this is one of the ways in which Liz and I were different, because we would literally tell them, bend over backwards to be nice. Go do something. And we actually used to refer people to this gal for what we called Robin's sucking up lessons. And Robin would actually help people figure out, what do I need to do to win these people over? And a lot of times, the easiest path was the guy's mother, strange as that may seem, because I hope this won't be news, but a lot of times when men want visitation, and it's a baby, it's not them changing the diaper or giving the bottle, it's their mother's. You know, so win over the mother and you're going to be in good shape, usually. Other family members, and the guy himself, be nice to him. A lot of times in these cases, the adversity is so pervasive that the idea of being nice to someone just goes completely out the window. And especially the other party, I mean, they're so angry at each other, the idea of being nice and civilized is absurd. I had a client the other day, and she is in a really bad situation because she's got a 3-month-old she's nursing, and she's got a 17-month-old who's weaned, and she's been letting the guy take him over for the whole weekend. And with a 3-month-old, I find that absurd. She needed someone to say, hey, you got to put your foot down about this, you know, because this guy, it doesn't care. He brings them back Sunday night at 11 o'clock. You know, those kind of things where he demonstrates that he doesn't care about the kids, he doesn't care about their bedtimes, and, you know, they're little tiny kids. And I had her memorize a mantra, I called it. I said, now, when he calls you again, because he wanted to take them on July 4th, today, and she said, okay, you take them in the morning and I'll take them in the evening. And he said, no, I want them at night. She said, well, are you going to bring them home? I don't know. He might keep them overnight. He already kept them all last weekend. And so I said, look, you got to put your foot down. Here's what I want you to memorize. When he calls, I want you to say, I'm sorry, and you say he can't, and he starts yelling and screaming, I want you to say, I'm sorry that we can't discuss this nicely right now. I really hope we'll be able to decide it in the future in the best interest of our children. And when we're ready, and I know you're mad now, but when we're ready, we'll be able to discuss this. And the whole point of it is to chop his legs out from under him, in a way. And when someone's mad and you're nice to them, they don't know what to do with it. It's really not what people usually do in our world. So it's disarming. And it's hard to be mad at someone when they're being nice to you. And if they're offering you more visitation than you even asked for, it's hard to be mad at them. You know, so we say, offer. Don't make them beg. Don't make them demand. Try to get it as flexible as you can, where, hey, the baby's sick today, you know, why don't we put it off, do it tomorrow instead? Okay, hey, my mother's in town suddenly by surprise, can I get the baby today? Yeah, work it out together, be able to talk to each other, because you're human beings, and human beings have to talk to each other. So, the basic idea with parenting plans is short, frequent. We always have, you know, there's this ideal world, and then there's the real world. And in the ideal world, every baby is nursing until he's good and ready to quit, and whatever disputes the parents have are not affecting the baby. But then there's the real world, where that's a nice thing to strive for, but we can never quite get there in most cases. So if you're getting calls from people and you think that they're going to get to this point where they have the perfect plan, you're not being very realistic. Unfortunately, people aren't perfect, and the whole idea of the perfect plan is probably elusive. But We see a lot of couples. We have some success stories, and the success story for a lawyer in my business is a couple who talk to each other. Just as simple as that. If they can talk to each other, they'll be okay. They don't have to agree on everything, but if they can talk like human beings, they'll do fine. Some of the problems we see, and the biggest one, is the distance. So many of them where we get the problems are moms in one state, dads in another, or in a different city, or something that's an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours away. And those are very difficult, especially with young babies. It's really hard to put, you know, 2 months, 3 months old kids in cars for 3 or 4 hours, or you know, whatever. Putting them on planes, you know. I was on a plane yesterday, and there was a lot of wailing when we got down here to San Francisco, let me tell you. There were half a dozen infants on that plane. You know, so you don't want to make kids travel. You don't want to get them in some parents have to have everything worked out, you know, from today through the date the kid turns 18, or the youngest one turns 18. They have to have every visit worked out. And some can just have every other weekend and whenever else we can work it out, and they do fine. So there's no one thing that works for one particular thing. And what Liz used to do when she did recommendations is she would spend an hour or two or more on the phone with the mother, and she'd get all kinds of interesting data, but she'd find out all these things about how far, what are the schedules. You get some people that work at nights and some that don't work on certain days during the week. You get some guys that really want to do it and are good at it and have the time or the opportunity to play Mr. Dad and Mr. Mom. And you know, they should be encouraged. One of the things that always gets me is I get moms and they're saying, he's dangerous. He shouldn't see these kids. You know, and that's a really hard one. It's a really dangerous situation to make that allegation without proof. Many, many women have done it all over the country. And they're one of the reasons why we don't want to take breastfeeding into the courtroom, because they've gone and they've done that. And there's all kinds of difficulties that come up. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. I'm talking about family law and dad's bonds. And what Liz would do is she would interview these people, and she would get all these interesting things about who was doing what and why and where and when. One of the examples that I think is interesting is I would talk to someone, and I'd get a bunch of interesting information, and I thought I had it all. And then Liz would talk to the same person, and she'd come back and she'd say, "Did you know that it was him that wanted the divorce?" No. Did you know why he wanted the divorce? No. Did you know it was because he met somebody on the internet? No. She'd get all this stuff. And this is, again, one of the reasons why I can't replace her, because I think it was woman to woman, and gals just ain't going to tell me that stuff. And being a gentleman, I have trouble asking it of women I'm not married to. And, you know, that kind of stuff. So they're not going to tell me, but they would tell her. She'd get all these details, and she'd know the whole story. That's how she was. But then she would put together this very, very complete recommendation, and it would be chock full of all these citations to the psychological literature. Because breastfeeding in family law is not a legal issue. Okay? It's an issue about separation and bonding, which is psychology, and it is not law. There's many states that have these canned visitation things. Texas is particularly bad. And basically it says you're doing, this is the schedule. And to me it sounds horrible, because it's a cookie cutter. It's making everybody try to fit in that cookie cutter. And families have different things going on, different children. I mean, you may have a baby and a six-year-old and a teenager, and different activities and different schedules and schools and, you know, just all kinds of things, work. And, you know, so you really have to look at the individuals. There's no such thing as a perfect plan, and don't take it to court. If you happen to be a leader and you get these kind of calls, you know, if, like I said, with some of them, occasionally there may be some shred of a lactation issue there that you can help the mom with. And you can certainly help her with things like how to help the kids when they come back from a visit, because they're usually clinging to you like for dear life. One of the things I tell clients is, if you think you're having a problem with visits, then be very careful to observe how the kids are when they come back. Are the sleep patterns disturbed? Are they clingy? Are their eating patterns disturbed? What's different? Because if they're going to go to court and say this isn't working, there needs to be a reason why it's not working other than the suspicion that they just don't want to do what the father wants to do. What the conundrum that I think judges get in is they have to be fair to both sides. So, and that's why we have these scales of justice, because everything has to balance. So, it's my lawyer time. So, you know, when you're a judge, your mom comes in and says, Dad's no good, he's rotten, he's lazy, he didn't do this, he never changed a diaper, he's horrible. And mom says that. Dad comes and says, she's trying to keep my baby from me, she won't let me do anything, she's bossy, she's controlling, she thinks I don't know anything. You know, what's a judge going to do? I'll tell you what he's going to do. He or she is going to cut that baby in half and do 50-50. That's where they're all going right now. California is particularly, I think, leading the country in this direction. And this split custody, rotating custody stuff, there's a great debate among the psychologists as to whether it's harmful or not. Personally, I think it's harmful. I certainly can't see where it's good. I don't think that nature designed us to be half time with mom and half time with dad, especially in our early years. I think nature designed something that was very mother friendly for the first few years at least. And I know as a league dad that when my kids were young and Liz was off at a league meeting or something without them and I was entertaining to the best of my ability, when they got to the point where they wanted mom, that was it. There's nothing a guy can do. And so I wonder sometimes with men asking for visitation with breastfed babies and overnights, I wonder, boy, are they going to get earplugs? I mean, what are they going to do? How are they going to handle this? Because there's going to be a lot of crying, you know? And even the best-intentioned man, as long as you spell it M-A-N, he's not going to be able to do it. So, and then I look at mothers sometimes who don't want their babies to have any visitation and say, don't you want a break? Don't you want to be able to take a shower? I mean, I remember Liz, please take this baby so I can take a shower. Okay. Wah, wah, wah. I'd be throwing him and I'd be doing that. I'd be doing all this stuff to entertain for 5 minutes so she could take a shower. You know, so it's like, gee, I think, don't you want to get a break? Wouldn't it be nice to have this guy come take your baby for a couple hours so you can, you know, take care of yourself or even just rest? Well, those are the practical things that I see in it, but once people get in court and lawyers get a hold of them, no offense to us as lawyers, we tend to make them fight. You know, that's sort of how it goes. That's what our business is making people fight. And intentionally or unintentionally, that's what usually results. I started being a mediator about 6 or 7 years ago because it felt like, gee, all I do is get involved in fights. Maybe I can settle a few. And you know, as a practice thing, it's a little nicer because the things are in and out and done rather than sitting on my desk for years and years. But there's all this adversity in our society, and it's contrary to a lot of the ideals of La Leche League, I think. And I think that the more women we get out there nursing and breastfeeding, and the more attachment parenting we get going out there, the less crime, poverty, disease, and all this other stuff we're going to have. In other words, it's going to be a better world. But the legal system doesn't really help, especially the courts. It's just not set up for that. So I got a real dim view about taking anything into court that involves breastfeeding. And if you call me, I'm going to discourage you. And I'm going to tell you, okay, if you have to go, okay, here's what you do. But I'm going to really discourage you because the odds are that it's not going to work out very well. Physicians, usually, here's the priorities if you have to bring something into court involving breastfeeding. Baby's pediatrician who is supportive of breastfeeding. A number one witness. Can't get better than that in a judge's mind. Next would be a pediatrician who is not the baby's pediatrician. Next would be basically a psychologist, especially a clinical psychologist, PhD, who is experienced with infants and child development. After that, the pecking order unfortunately gets to IBCLCs and La Leche League leaders. And, you know, when it comes down to a legal struggle, the knowledge and information that the leaders and lactation consultants have is about nursing. It's not about the law, and it's not about custody, and it's not about visitation. And so there isn't a whole lot you can do. Being supportive of moms is good. We don't encourage leaders to go to court because it's problematic. It's very problematic. And a lot of times you think you're helping someone, but you're not. So there's all kinds of dangers out there in court. We don't want to go there with breastfeeding. So we move on. Talked about the legislation. Let's talk about the employment stuff, because I think it's fascinating. Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second. I think the employment is absolutely where it's at. I think every day in this country there's a certain number of women, I don't know what the number it is, but every day a certain number of women find themselves pregnant. Every day a certain number of women give birth. Every day a certain number of women wean. I don't know what the numbers are, but I know it happens every day. This is part of life. It's a cycle. It keeps going on and on and on. It's not just my wife. It's everybody. So, and most people, when they grow up, go to work. It's a fact of our lives. So, employment is where there's a lot of tension because of the societal attitudes about breastfeeding, because it skipped a generation or two, because the founders were smart enough to come along and start this up again, we've got a chance. But in employment, we can do a lot of good. And if you're a leader or an LC, and you got a mom calling you saying, I'm going back to work and I'm having trouble with my employer, there's some special things you have to know. One is that labor law problems are unique amongst themselves. I will tell you one more story. Liz and I had a case when we first met that we did together. It was a labor law case of an airline employee, wrongful discharge. When we filed it, it was timely in federal court. 3 years later, after we'd spent about $50,000 taking depositions from virtually everybody in the universe, a new law was passed, and then a court held that it should be retroactive, and then our court held that it should be retroactive to our case. So a case that we filed timely was no longer timely, and it was dismissed. And the man never had a chance to be heard on the merits. Does the universe turn? Keep turning? Yeah. Does the earth keep turning? Yeah. Does the republic fall? No. But labor law has some serious time deadlines. So as a lawyer, I tell people, go get your local labor lawyer immediately and do not waste even one day. Sometimes the statute of limitations can be as short as 6 weeks for some claims. So that's a no messing around kind of situation. Don't take your time. And if you talk to a mom like that, you tell her, go talk to a lawyer immediately. If she's got any kind of actionable claim or anything in court, she's going to have to do it right away. Fortunately, most of the time, what you're going to get is, I'm trying to go back to work, and there's no place to pump there. Or, there's a room I could use, but they won't let me use it. Or something like that, where there really is a solution. There really is a remedy that you can help them with. And as I said earlier, the remedy starts with education. And sometimes these statutes, this legislation, is very, very helpful because you can go with a wave a copy of it in some states and say, see, you have to. And as I told you, this year, a whole bunch more states are passing that, and I expect to see more of it over the coming years. So first question maybe to ask is there a statute concerning the workplace in this state? Because that may be very helpful. And then it might be simply a matter of educating. As I mentioned earlier, there's a certain number of them that are just really lactation questions. They need the right kind of pump. It still blows my mind the number of women that call, and they've got these little hand pumps that they got at the hospital or something, and I'm an M-A-N, but I don't understand who in their right minds thinks that that's going to work. Anyway, so you can help with it when it's really a lactation problem. You can help them manage the lactation and the pumping and the break time is something, usually, if they're nice, they're going to be able to do it. There was that one highly publicized case, I think the name was Donna Koch, lost her job because she wanted to pump on her duty-free time and then wound up years of litigation and wound up losing. and having to pay the other side's lawyers. So, you know, I mean, again, it's the kind of thing where the courthouse is not where your best remedy is. Your best remedy is in education, and especially in employment. There are workplace programs. What's the name of the big pump company? I forgot. Medela. I know that they, you know, when they talk about people, big companies like General Motors and you know, really big employers like that, then you can start talking about these institutional programs, and that's one where you can get enough dollars and cents to really do it. You get in your mom-and-pop employers, and that's really not possible. But in your mom-and-pop employers, usually the employee is much closer to the individual people and can go, Bill, I need a little help here. And Bill is happy because Bill needs you and he wants you because you're a good employee and he's willing to work with you. The other thing that I think helps, especially with others of my species, the MAN, is dollars and cents. The fact is that nursing mothers miss less work. Their health insurance claims amount to less. Their babies are healthier and they are healthier. So if they help their employee, they'll have a happy, healthy employee and a happy, healthy baby, and everybody will be happy and healthy. And if they put their foot down and say, no, I'm not going to do that, they may not have such a happy workforce. And when they're big, they can afford to do that because there's millions of people unemployed. But when they're little, it's much harder. So with your small employers, it's really educate, go talk. Talk nice. Don't threaten. Don't say, I'm going to have a nurse in here if you don't let me do this. Liz was very much against nurse-ins. Gives the wrong message in her opinion. And I tend to agree with her in most circumstances. Most of the time when that came up, it had to do with legislation. But even with these employment situations, we had one mom call us and say, you know, they won't let me pump at work. I'm going to go start a nurse-in. And Liz was able to discourage her after yelling at her for about half an hour or so. Anyway, the employment area, that's the major thing is the unpaid leave that they're putting in the statutes and the place to pump. Interesting, in Florida, when they passed the statute in 93, the next year there was still a little momentum left in the legislature, and they passed one that had to do with a demonstration project, nursing in the workplace at the state, at one of the state agencies, and they were ordered to do like a pilot program to help their employees who are moms set up pump rooms and get equipment and refrigerators and stuff. And interestingly, I've never heard another word about it. I don't know what happened. It's not been highly publicized, and there probably are some people who know, but I sort of thought that after you did a demonstration project, if it was successful, then you expanded it and pushed it out into other areas. And that's never happened, so I assume it wasn't very successful, and I don't know why. I'm sure that other states are going to suggest that, and that there is going to be more of those kind of programs that we see. But I don't know whether they're effective or not. It sounds like a good idea. You know, because states tend to be big-scale employers like GM and Boeing. They aren't mom and pop. And they have their HR people and all these rules and regulations they have to live with. So you'd think that they could do it. But you don't read in the paper and you don't see a whole lot in the press anywhere about workplace programs being these demonstration projects being successful. And I don't even know who to ask. So it's something where it just they pass the bill and then it just seems to go into the twilight zone and doesn't come back. In a moment, I'm going to get to some questions, so think about them. There's just a couple other areas I'm going to mention real quickly. Jury duty, as I said before, is something that's come up. A lot of statutes have been passed. Many states also have, in Florida, for example, if you're the primary caretaker for a child under six, you're exempt. So whether you're nursing or not. So there's no point in nursing mothers having to worry about it unless you got one over six, in which case you probably shouldn't go in there and try to say that you can't do jury duty because of it. And I'm sure that a six-year-old could last all day. But anyway, these criminal cases, you know, we see them every once in a while. There's two types. One is a mom that's charged with a crime because she's done some kind of drugs or something. There was also one in New York where, you know, when you have failure to thrive, Sometimes they start pointing the finger at a breastfeeding mom, and misunderstandings come up, and bad stuff starts to happen. You get those kind, and you get occasionally moms going to jail who have babies, and they want a nurse in jail. The federal sentencing guidelines have something to say about what you can and can't do, and whether that can be taken into account as to whether you go to prison or not, and for how long. But as a general rule, federal judge isn't going to let you out for breastfeeding. And nor is any other judge anyplace else going to let you off for a crime because you were breastfeeding. So the criminal ones is one, like I mentioned in the beginning, we don't want to hear a lot about it. If we hear a lot about it, it's bad. It's bad publicity. Same thing for the social service agencies. And this was another one of Liz's passions, because I think she always referred to them as red herrings. You get a call from a mom, and she says, they're taking my kid away because I'm breastfeeding. How old is your kid? He's 5. What else? Anything else? Family bed, no immunizations, homeopathy, homeschooling, you know, the whole package of fringe parenting. And next thing you know, this cookie-cutter person in the social service agency is saying, well, this is weird. I'm going to take the kids away and then ask questions. And which is what they'll do if you have an attitude with them. Unfortunately, in those cases, you're dealing with some college grads who are not particularly well trained for the jobs they're doing and are horribly underpaid for the jobs they're doing, and yet have this enormous responsibility to decide when there's abuse and neglect. And it's a horrible subject to start with, but so many times that we've seen where someone has suggested that a baby should be taken away for breastfeeding past a certain age, and they've called and we've talked with them and given them information, and then they've backed off. So, you know, hopefully, I think one of the things that happens with that is you get a knock on the door. Hi, I'm with social services. I'm here to ask you questions about your child. It's been reported that there's abuse and neglect here. And most people say, what? And they want to slam that door. And it's like the worst thing you can do. You got to talk to them. If you're a leader and you're dealing with moms that have these kind of problems, then they need to get to a lawyer fast again, like the labor cases. They don't have time to mess around, and they need to get their attitude corrected right away. They need to satisfy whatever the concerns are. Oftentimes, these are like a mad neighbor or somebody who's reported you for spite, and you know, and the remedy again is usually education. Education always goes further than litigation. So that's my bottom line: is educate, don't litigate or mediate. Do we have any questions? Don't be bashful. Yeah. I don't buy it.
Hi, my name is Jordan Daly. I'm from Virginia. My wife is a leader in Yorktown, and I'm a licensed attorney in Virginia. Unfortunately, I practice real estate law, so when she gets calls, I don't know how to answer a lot of them. We got a call recently, and there's a lot of military in our area, and a young enlisted woman had just gone back to work. She had been out for 8 weeks. I think she had used up the additional 4 weeks earlier in the year, so she couldn't rely on the 12 weeks out. She got back in, wanted to breastfeed at work. Her superior officer told her, no, no, go in your car, go in the bathroom, the typical.
Go in the tent.
The question I have is, because my wife was livid and was trying to come up with solutions, and she turned to me and said, well, what can she do? I said, well, you know, first of all, I practice real estate, so that's, you know, we're in a bad spot here. But my question was, I'm pretty aware that Virginia has a relatively progressive stance now. They instituted, as you were saying, about the program at the state level where they had government-sponsored rooms that allow for breastfeeding. Virginia has done that recently. But my question is, where does the military fall when it comes to the state legislation?
The military doesn't come under the state legislation.
That was what I thought.
And the situation you describe is difficult, and the unfortunate problem that the mother has is she signed a contract with Uncle Sam.
Okay.
And when she signed that contract, whether she knew it or not, she was given up her right to...
to become a mother?
No, not to become a mother.
In the sense that she would have to fulfill her obligations regardless of what her motherly obligations
right.
would be.
When her leave time is up, that's all they're required to give her.
Okay. Do you know, Do you know if they have any requirements for providing a space?
There are none in law.
Okay.
There are none in law. Again, it's the kind of thing where she's going to be better off talking to individuals that she knows and is familiar with and being really nice mm-hmm. and trying to get them to accommodate her than she is trying to walk in with a boot and say, you got to do this or I'll kick you.
Yeah. No, she, as a follow-up, she did tell us that she was trying to get out sooner. They told her the soonest she could get out was 3 months. And since then, we've actually gotten a call back that they're speeding it up so she can get out in 2 months,
yeah.
probably because she was rocking the boat a little
yes.
bit.
Yes. I mean, generally, we had one a year or two ago, and the gal was on got a combat assignment, and the commanding officer wasn't backing off.
Mm-hmm.
And she wound up weaning. And she went overseas and left the baby with her mother or something. She didn't have a choice. It was very unfortunate, but that was her duty.
Okay.
Most of the time, though, they're not going to want you.
And that's what, I mean? That's what this woman found out.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Who else?
Lois Arnold. And I just wanted to add something. I believe the Department of Defense actually has a lactation program within its walls. So
yeah.
if she's actually in the Department of Defense, she has recourse, but not as an enlisted person.
I'm sorry, just to clarify,
yeah.
Department of Defense is the administrative arm.
Right.
So that's a workplace program. It doesn't apply really to the gals in the military.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I had an interesting sort of question once from a company that had actually established a lactation program because one of their employees was breastfeeding, and they had gone to the trouble of putting in a pump and providing this woman with storage space for her milk, and it was in the occupational health area, and it was a safe place for her to store the milk during the day, and she refused to use this facility. And this was in New York in the Hudson River someplace. I forget where and what the company was. And persisted.
That's like Sleepy Hollow.
Persisted in pumping in the lavatory, at which point occupational safety and health got very
can't do that
upset
here.
Because they thought this was unsafe for the milk, obviously, mm-hmm. and the quality of the milk. So she took a labor action against them, and I never heard what happened, but the company called me for advice. You have any thoughts on this? I mean, my personal feeling was that the mother was way out of line on this, that the company had...
I mean, yeah, it sounds like they were accommodating her.
Yeah.
I mean, they spent money they didn't have to spend to do this, and then she says, no, it's not good enough for me. I don't know, it wasn't good enough for her? Is that the problem?
It's good enough.
I mean, I don't know what she expected. You know, I mean, this goes back again to what I was saying before about, you know, is there a perfect world? Is there an ideal family law case, you know, where everything's going to be fun? No. And in these workplace things, with that one anyway, I don't know what else the company could do.
Yeah.
I mean, as a general rule, what we would want to do would be encourage them to do it for the next gal. You know, what I mean? We don't want that gal to ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah.
So you'd want to get back to them and say, well, you know, you saved a lot of money over the years on your health insurance and your employee absenteeism and all that stuff, you know, and help them see that there's something in it for them. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Bill Childs. My wife is also a leader in Virginia, and I'm also an attorney, although I don't do real estate law.
Not a third lawyer, okay.
I'm a litigator in D.C., and I just wanted to provide something that I think is a little bit of a different approach than what you're saying, and I don't think it necessarily needs to be, but when there's an abuse and neglect statement, if there's a hint of that, while I agree that education rather than litigation is going to be better, I think the first step has to be getting a lawyer if there's any component of possible criminal liability.
Right.
I mean, you have to be careful. You don't want to just start talking right away before you've talked to somebody.
Right. I agree with
and
you
I don't
generally.
Think you're saying other
I
than
agree
that.
With you generally that in these cases, you know, if they're calling any of us, if they're calling me and I'm in a different state and I can't practice law in
right.
my state, or if they're calling a leader or somebody else,
yeah,
they should be told to get a local lawyer.
Right. And
ASAP.
And that's the main thing. I don't want
yeah.
my wife giving legal advice.
ASAP. We can't give legal advice.
Insurance.
Right.
So.
You know, but the situation we were really talking about, just to clarify, is you get the knock on the door. There's a report of abuse. You know, some people are sophisticated enough to just handle that.
Yes.
And just say, oh, no, look, you just moved in. And, you know, sometimes it's a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I just, and then they don't need to. Especially when the call comes to the leader, if you're a leader and you get a call like that,
right.
You don't need to be, should not be the leader's role, right, to say, you should be educating rather than,
right,
litigating.
Right, you've got a statute, take it, grab it, go tell them this, go,
yeah,
do that.
The leader's role can be, you can get an attorney. If your attorney wants to talk to me, I'm happy to do that, but just be very careful in that universe.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned the criminal situation, and those are obvious. You know, if someone comes and says you're under arrest, you know, you need a lawyer. Absolutely. No two ways about it. Don't even need to ask another question. Yes, ma'am.
Just out of curiosity, you had mentioned when CPS comes into the home to go on ahead and be as nice and as friendly as you can. I had an experience about 4 years ago as a homeschooling thing, and I let them in, not knowing that I don't have to let them in, and it turned out to something more because they saw a carpet was dirty with a baby in the room. Where do you stand on that with, you know, breastfeeding and letting them in, and they might see, you know, maybe you're nursing your toddler or your 3 or 4 year old, and he's starting to come and, you know, feel on you and what have you. Where do you stand on that?
Well, here's the problem. When they knock on the door, if you don't let them in, you've created suspicion, and you've just made your life more miserable. So I think it's a question of discretion. There's some things that are just misunderstandings. There are occasionally crazy people out there who call up and say, Liz Baldwin is abusing her kids. I can hear the screaming right now. And you know, it's not true. So they come out, and you say, well, nobody's abusing anybody here. Okay, fine, goodbye. You know, and then there's these other situations where they come out and they say, we have a report of abuse. You're doing something sexual with a 6-year-old because you're nursing him. And those kind of things are, you know, they're red herrings. Those are the things that we're saying, get a lawyer, you know, or you got a problem, you know. And you don't want to, if you close the door on the person, you've made your problem worse. So closing the, oftentimes one of the best things to say, oftentimes the way this comes up is you come home and you find their card on your door. That's the way it usually happens, okay? Usually you're not home, okay? So you come home and you get the card. Now you have a chance to think and prepare yourself before you make the call. If it's a knock on the door and they're saying, we want to ask you questions, say, okay, but not right now. Can we do it later? Because I'm in the middle of this and my baby and that. And you know, if you're being reasonable and nice, they're going to accommodate you somewhat. Usually with those things, they're not coming in with the guns blazing. If they get a report that says, you know, like I said, Liz Baldwin's beating him, I can hear it, I can hear the blood dripping on the walls, they're going to come in with the cops and they're going to come in with the guns drawn. And they're going to ask questions later. But if it's something like, well, you know, there might be some sexual abuse because there's a 4-year-old over there nursing, you know, some people will get more excited about it than others. And people who have any information of their own are going to say, so what? That's no crime, no abuse. But others will get excited about it. And then when they're excited about it and you say, no, I'm not going to talk to you, I'm going to get a lawyer first, then they get harder on you. So, you know, part of what Liz and I have always done in all kinds of cases is try to keep it from getting into a bigger conflict than it already is. Be nice to people. The fact that we have disputes with people doesn't mean that we have to hate them and act it. So, you know, and that's what happens, I think, with a lot of those situations. You get upset about it, and then you have this person, and they're your enemy, and they're your persecutor. And so being nice to them is the last thing in the world you want to do. Just like the wife doesn't want to be nice to the husband in a divorce. She's mad at him. And whether you have good reason or not to be mad, this is still a civilized world. And we accomplish things by civilized discourse. Our anger doesn't accomplish anything. It tears down. So you want to try to avoid acting on it and slamming that door. There are probably situations where it would be good advice not to talk to them. If you have done something, you know, or, you know, you have something to hide that, you know, I personally would let them in if it were me. But that's me. And it's not something I would give people legal advice about. Because usually they don't call before. They call after. They already have the card in the hand, or they already had the confrontation with the person. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. You'll have to excuse my voice. Is there any value to a breastfeeding relationship in terms of, can you actually hold a hospital liable for terminating a breastfeeding relationship, like by inadvertently giving a medication, like say a radioactive drug, and they didn't ask the mother if she was nursing, or you know, if they send a mother home with a hand pump when she hasn't latched on at all, and the mom gets home and it, you know, fails to breastfeed.
Okay. I hear several different questions there, and the question of hospital liability is, you know, a difficult one because of things that are considerably more complicated than the way we were describing them. But let me take an easier one as part of your question first. They give her a hand pump. She goes home, baby weans. What's the damages? When you go to court, what is it you're going to prove? If this baby had continued to breastfeed, then what? Are you going to go in and say, this baby got a cold on the 21st of July because you sent her home with the sand pump and then he weaned and then he didn't have the immunities and so he got a cold? What if it's more serious? Is there a doctor anywhere that can prove it's because of the breastfeeding or not breastfeeding? You know what I mean? You know, breastfeeding reduces your risk of things. It doesn't eliminate it. So you can't prove that it was the breastfeeding or not the breastfeeding. And in tort law, the only really important question, I think, is how much. So you can't put a dollar figure on that. You mentioned another one of injecting her with something.
Like a radioactive drug.
And I'm not sure. That raises a whole bunch of lawyer questions in my mind, like, did she consent to it? Did she know it was happening? You know, and there you may have a different legal situation. There, instead of saying they were negligent by giving her a hand pump when they knew she had a problem and should have had an electric one, they put something in her they weren't supposed to do, or that they didn't have consent for. You know how you have to sign before they do anything to you? Well, if they didn't get her to sign, then they could have a real problem there, and there could be a medical malpractice problem there. But I think that's a little bit different than something like the pump. Yes, ma'am.
I don't have a question. I just have a statement. Patty Hope, I had been involved with social services 17 years ago as a foster parent,
mm-hmm.
and had fostered several children and then ended up being a mother and birthing and such. And then Liz had given me advice 12 years ago because my parenting was very fringe parenting. And she had mm-hmm. said it's not a bad idea to have a doctor and such. So that was real good information. And it also helped me alleviate the fear, you know, that goes with fringe parenting, that somebody can come in and do something. So that was very helpful. And then last fall, my 16-year-old had legal issues, and we got involved with social services again. And going in with that positive attitude on that they're not against you, that they can be there to help, was really something. I was so surprised at how much help I did get from the system, and a lot of preparation along the way, and every time having everything written down, what I wanted and what we were working on, what our goals were.
The Liz Baldwin method.
Yes, and it really did make a difference. And I was so surprised. I think social services, I know myself, I didn't have a good opinion of them, and the legal system of the juvenile courts. And it's completely different now when you go in with a positive attitude and that you're not going in to save your child and, you know, oh, they didn't do this. Oh, yeah, they did. You know, you can prove it as well. But that you both want what's best for this child so that they can move on. It really was positive. So I really thank Liz.
I think there's a basic fact that you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. And this is really hard in the legal field because we're supposed to go fight. I'm supposed to be a zealous advocate for my clients, and we all think of that in terms of war. The best analogies to litigation are all in military strategies, you know, and it's all an adverse system, an adversary system, and designed to fight. But the fact is, even within that system, you know, if you're nice to the judge's secretary, you'll get a hearing date faster. Duh. Okay? I mean, little things like that, and bigger things too. You know, and basically when you deal with people in the system, if you're nice to them, the system will work better for you than if you're not. It's as simple as that. I mean, I think it probably applies to everything, not just law, but Basically, when you're nice, people will be nicer to you. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
I have two fairly quick questions.
I've heard that before. Did you hear that?
No.
It's like when a lawyer says, I only have one more question, Judge.
I warned you, I had two. In a family law situation, would your advice to the mother be significantly different if it was a situation of they were not married at the time of conception, the father was not refused to be involved during the pregnancy and delivery, and then maybe a few months later decides to use the child to get back at the mother and now demands visitation because this is definitely his child. I mean, there's no issue of fatherhood here or paternity, but would it be significantly different if maybe the first involvement with the father is...
It's a red herring. Sorry. But I hear it all the time. He doesn't know how to change a diaper. He hasn't done this. He didn't lift a finger. He wouldn't come to see him. He didn't even use all the visits that the court gave him. It's all nonsense. It'll all go straight out the window if he decides to be Father of the Year. And it happens all the time. Why? There could be a number of perfectly reasonable explanations. He changed his mind. He came to his senses. He realized how important his baby was, his mother, his girlfriend. Somebody said something. It could be any number of reasons why he changed his mind. But that past isn't going to matter. A judge isn't going to care, usually. And they're going to say, he'll learn how to change the diaper. He'll figure out nap time.
Okay, so basically
his lack of involvement is a real red herring. When you throw that out, you make yourself look bad.
Okay.
You make yourself look like you're trying to deny access.
Okay. The second question is, when I suggest to the mom she needs to see an attorney as soon as possible, what should she be looking for? An attorney either in family law or in situations of abuse? Obviously, they're not equally qualified in family law. And I've had moms say, I've talked to John Doe, and he was worthless, and he was a family law practitioner. So what is she looking for?
Well, let me see if I understand
his qualifications.
If she's in a divorce or paternity situation?
Divorce situation, and she's, you know, she sees custody as a potential issue.
Family law. She's got to have a family lawyer. Okay. Well, here's the thing. We hear things all the time. You talk to someone, they say, the judge ordered 50-50 time with my 2-year-old. Yeah, did you have a lawyer? Yeah. Sorry, he was a dirt lawyer. Yeah, okay. You know, I've tried all kinds of cases in every kind of case, not just divorce. But, like, there's certain things that I wouldn't do. I'm not qualified. You know, tax comes to mind real quickly. I don't know. I wouldn't try it. It's usually a bad idea to engage a lawyer in an area outside his or her area of concentration.
So should her first question be, how much experience do you have in this area?
I don't know if that should be the first question, but that is probably one of the questions.
Okay.
You know, there's hundreds or thousands of local bar associations. They have different kinds of programs, and generally speaking, they don't want to talk about qualifications. The state bar, for example, in Florida will tell you there is a disciplinary action or there was a disciplinary action founded and discipline imposed, or there isn't. And there's so many pending complaints, but they won't tell you, yeah, he's a great lawyer. There are some, you know, you're asking a technical question. I'm a lawyer, so I have to fudge. But there are certain things in Florida, for example, in order to say that you're a specialist in a certain field, you have to take a certification exam and pass muster. And so in some states that have programs like that, you can't use those words unless you have met the requirements. And so, you know, the interesting part of the question is, the reason it's interesting to me is that I have done all this other kinds of work also besides divorce work. So to me, it's insulting if you say, do you know anything about this? But I know lawyers who, for example, do nothing but personal injury plaintiffs work. And they're like the last people I would call about a family law case. They have nothing, they don't know anything about it. So, the choice of lawyers, you know, I am reluctant to get too far into that.
Can I switch this to a realm that we might be more comfortable with?
Sure.
When a mom comes to our group and is looking for an OB doctor, we'll tell her to open up the phone book, or, you know, there are different doctors who practice, who are pediatric doctors, who are OB doctors, and there'll be a whole list of them. And not that I know anything about law, but if you have a list of family of attorneys who practice family law, one would assume that she could call one up, make an appointment,
not
go
so
see
simple.
One.
Not so
and
simple. The problem is that family law lawyers aren't necessarily designated family law experts. For example, in Florida, I'm allowed to use that term because I took the test and passed it. But before I took the test and passed it, I couldn't use that term. But I was practicing family law for 17 years. I had plenty of experience. I knew what I was doing. So I'm a family law lawyer, but I can't necessarily say I specialize in family law in certain states.
There are many lawyer referral services
yes.
that are certified by the
yes.
bar.
Yes.
And attorneys have to document at least some experience in yes. the area in which they receive referrals.
Right. Well, and again, you know, I have a referral service in Florida, and they don't require anything of me, you know. And I could go and ask them to send me personal injury plaintiff cases if I wanted to, and they wouldn't ask me to pass a test or have any expertise in it at all. But, you know, there's all different kinds of referral things, and there's all different kinds of specialty things. The reason I'm having a problem with these questions is because you're asking me a technical question about specialization. The words family law lawyer in some states are an indicia of specialization that requires a test or some other requirements. So, you know, in general, when you're a leader and you've got a mom and she needs a lawyer, unless you know someone personally, you want to send her to a referral agency or the local bar. They will often have some kind of program for referrals. And, you know, there's issues that came up with this for league and referral programs because I know Liz had started a long time ago and was working with you on this thing with the legal associates. And we can't refer, we can't make referrals. It brings up malpractice insurance issues and all kinds of other stuff. So, you know, it sounds like an easy question. How do I get the right kind of lawyer? Well, the answer is you don't need a breastfeeding lawyer. You don't need someone that even knows a thing about breastfeeding. You need a good lawyer. And especially in family law, you need a good family law lawyer. Okay? You don't need a real estate lawyer. You don't need a tax lawyer. You need a family law lawyer. There are many good family law lawyers who don't have the specialist designation. There are many good lawyers that have only been practicing 4 or 5 years or less or more and haven't gotten to the point where they can even qualify for those things. But that doesn't mean they're not a great lawyer. So, and a lot of times, how good the lawyer is depends on how you get along with them. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to find a lawyer. The phone book, the referral services, people you know, you know. And usually, I hate to say it, but you get what you pay for in this world. So when you get the lawyer that's fresh out of law school, he or she probably isn't going to know all the tricks that someone who's been doing it a long time does. And they're probably not going to be quite as familiar with the procedures, and they're probably not going to have the judgment of knowing what happens when you go try cases. One of the things that we learn from repeated being hit in the head with it is you can't predict what's going to happen. Nobody's going to be happy with the result. It's going to cost a fortune, and everybody's going to be miserable. Those are the only things we know for sure. You know, so you want to try to settle your case outside of court if you can, if you're the party, if you're a leader or something. You know, you want to tell those, you can't give them legal advice. You got to send them to lawyers. And if you want to help them, fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, well, my brother knows so-and-so, why don't you go talk to him? I mean, you make a phone call and you find out, oh, well, so-and-so does securities regulation or something, you know. Okay, not the guy. Sometimes people live in small towns and there's only 3 lawyers. And you know, so there's really not a whole lot of stuff you do about choices. I don't think that the choice of the lawyer is really all that critical. Because one thing I'm always telling people that I consult with is, go tell your lawyer to do this, go tell your lawyer to do that. because you, the party is the consumer. They're paying the lawyer. They should be telling the lawyer what to do and not vice versa. Lawyers should be giving you advice, helping you accomplish objectives, helping you navigate the system, but not making the decisions for you. You got to make them. And so I'm always telling people, you know, I had one just the other day. She said, I said, your lawyer should be writing a letter to the other lawyer about this overnights with the three-month-old and should be saying it's unacceptable and inappropriate and let's work something else out. And she's saying, well, I mentioned that to my lawyer and he said it wouldn't do any good. I said, well, I think you should do it. And I think your other choice is go file and go to court and have a judge decide it. Or else let him have these overnights all weekend from 4 o'clock Friday to 11 o'clock Sunday night with a three-month-old that's nursing. You know, and I don't think she has that choice. But, you know, the point's the same. It's not so much who the lawyer is as how you work with them. And how you if the lawyer thinks that overnights are fine with you, he's going to agree to it. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten calls from people who said, my lawyer, I didn't agree to this. And you know, they signed it, you know, but I didn't know that I was going to have overnights now. Well, you know, that's usually something we can't help them too much with because they've already signed an agreement and it's already a done deal. But it's really not about who the lawyer is so much. It's how you get your lawyer to do what you need to do. The fact is that, and you know, I guess I'm fortunate because I have a mediator hat. And when I meet with people, I take off my lawyer hat and put my mediator hat on. Then I can criticize the system. And then I can tell them, look, the best thing for you and your family is to stay out of court. The absolute best thing for you to do is work this out and resolve it between yourselves. Otherwise, you're talking about a lot of money, an incalculable amount of stress, which will kill you, and possibly forever. There are people that literally go on litigating until their children are no longer children. And it is absolutely miserable to be the party in the litigation. We lawyers, it's not bad. We get paid. It's aggravating sometimes, but we get up, we go to a hearing, we lose, we win, we get paid. So, you know, it's about getting that lawyer to help you settle your case. And a lot of times you're going to find them resistant because they don't make much money when they settle it. It's a simple fact. I know that we are human beings. And I can try to be as objective as I want to be. But my self-interest is going to get in the way, I think. And I think it does on a regular basis in this system. And it's one of the things that's most wrong about it because I call it pumping up. A woman goes to see a lawyer. He says, oh, yeah, we'll get you child support. We'll get you alimony. We'll get you half the property. We'll get you no overnights and no visitation. We'll get you everything. We'll get you attorney's fees. You got a right to all that stuff. You know, and then 3 or 4 years later, when she's gotten nothing and paid him $50,000 and has nothing left, and he says, I'm dropping you now because you haven't got anything left. You know, well, how did that get out of hand? The whole point was he was making the decision, she wasn't, because it's dollars and cents. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I don't go out and try to build up the bill. I don't try to make unnecessary things happen. I don't try to make more conflict, but I think that unintentionally it happens because we're lawyers. We know how to fight. Meet with somebody else. You could meet with one person and they'll have you walking out ready to fight till the day you drop. You meet with me and I'll have you ready to settle.
So we're all going to settle.
Please, settle.
Right. May I have the mic a moment? I just wanted to say, Ken, thank you so very much. Oh, this is great.